Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Deborah Vess is the Associate Chief Information Officer at the Treasury Department and leads the HR Connect Program Office. She's also a Causey Award winner.
On the system that we created, which is Entry on Duty, it's about the onboarding process. And this product is really what we call one-to-many. So it's very exciting from a technology perspective to define a product that can actually be leveraged across many different agency and bureaus' needs because they all do something a little different.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Continuing congressional coverage is brought to you by United Technologies, Fortune Magazine's most admired aerospace and defense company for 10 of the last 11 years. More at utc.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we had double trouble. We got a double header, two people in the studio today. Got the yin and the yang thing going. You know, we got a govy, we got a commercial fella, and we're going to have a nice little mix of discussion talking about mobile madness today. Another show on mobile devices because they're so popular. In the studio we have Gwen Costin, who's the Director of Mobile Office and Citizen Services and innovative technology at the GSA. Good morning, Gwen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. And her counterpart here is Tim McLaughlin, who's the president and founder of Siteworks. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks.
And if you're listening to this and you want to Google around, the company is S-I-T-E-W-O-R-X. So Siteworks for more information about his company and GSA.gov for more information on the GSA. I think the listeners can maybe remember that.
I'm sure GSA has been heard of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A couple months back in April, there was a conference that addressed some of these issues about my listeners, federal IT professionals, trying to get a handle on how to manage mobile devices and what to do about their website and what good first steps are. And both of you have a lot of experience in that area, and I thought we'd have a discussion on that. But first of all, I want to find out, Gwen, a little bit more about how you wound up at the GSA so our listeners can maybe connect with you a little bit.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me, too. A little bit about my background. I've been at General Services Administration for about a year and a half, or give or take a month or two. And I came here from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, where I was Director of New Media for 6 years. I came to GSA in part because some of the issues that I saw at Homeland Security really was on a very, what we do on the department level can actually be expanded to a government-wide level. So I came to GSA to work on new media across government agencies, and the opportunity came up to really focus on mobile, and our office decided that it was really a very big, important area to be working on, so I was jumped at the assignment.
I once gave a talk at a conference on new media. That was DVDs.
Right.
So new media changes all the time, and Tim's been around a while, and what's your experience, and how'd you wind up with Siteworks, Tim?
I actually came to the Washington area to work for Lockheed Martin, company some I'm sure everybody's heard of, and ended up moving quickly into the dot-com boom that Northern Virginia had, and ended up doing mostly commercial work. Founded Siteworks in 2002 and stuck with it since then. We are actually doing some government work, although the majority is commercial all over the country. So I was originally the CTO.
Well, I was at a conference with some federal IT professionals just yesterday, and it was a commercial folks, and they want that input. I mean, that's well received from the people I talk to in a lot of agencies. Because they want to see other folks are doing it and compare and contrast and find out that they're as frustrated as everyone in Topeka is about how to handle mobile devices. And I mean, it's just this big tsunami. I learned that word a few months back. It's a tsunami of mobile devices, and everyone's trying to figure it out. People who are designing websites are worried about it, and people have security concerns, homeland security concerns. And so you folks were participating in a conference in April, and this was the Government Web and New Media Conference. What was the objective there?
Well, the objective of the conference was to share information. And as I said, you know, one of the things that we're doing at General Services Administration and our office, Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies, is we're actually working very much on sharing the love, accelerating information sharing, and trying to make sure that we have good quality information and citizen services across government. And so the conference overall really works to help agencies share from each other, learn from each other, and raise all the boats to have of good quality.
You know, Tim, we had the folks from vaccines.gov in the air here, and they did a survey of their constituency, and they found out that 95% of their constituents have phones, and they wanted information on the phones, and so they changed their website to adapt to their, not their customers, but their clients or the citizens. You've seen that experience in other organizations as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, we talk to government agencies who see the same thing, but in the commercial side, it's we're seeing opportunities where people want the website and the mobile experience to be updated simultaneously because they, from their perspective, it's you meet your customers where they are. Mm-hmm. And if they're on mobile, that's where you go first. Sometimes it makes a lot of sense to even pursue it more aggressively at this point.
I like my fun facts. Here's the first fun fact of the interview. The Acuity Group says that 25% of the top 500 websites have mobile websites, either embedded with them or part of them. So, I mean, this is a trend we see in the commercial world and the federal world. At this conference, you had, Interior, ATF, and GSA. And each one of these participants had a kind of a different approach to looking at the new devices that are out there. Can you share with us maybe different approaches that you have to iPad, iPhone, Android? I mean, what kind of approaches do you have?
Well, that's actually a great question. I think that's the number one question that we hear from government agencies is, where do I start? What do I do? What is the best approach? And we see agencies doing a lot of different types of things. It's driven by budget, it's driven by audience, it's driven by strategy. What we're recommending is that people take a look at who their audience is, what their mission is, and what they're trying to accomplish. So they need to know where their users are. And so as the vaccines folks found out that most of their users used handsets, they used cell phones, it makes sense for them to go there. But then the question is, what types of devices are they using? Are they using feature phones, just kind of the regular phones, or are they using smartphones? Do they want to receive text messages? Or do they want to go to a mobile website? Is there a specific task that they want to do on the run that is localized, and so that you want to create products like that? So I think we're seeing a lot of different approaches, but it's really based upon audience, and it's based upon what the organization, what the agency is trying to accomplish.
Tim, here's another fun fact for you. Mary Meeker did a study, and she said the inflection point is going to come sometime in 2012 where more people will be accessing websites with smartphones than with desktop computers. Would you have bet on that horse 5 years ago?
5 years ago, maybe not. Probably 2 years ago, certainly.
Really, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we were seeing the trend ahead of that motion. I referenced in many interviews, we did a website for a commercial customer. And their ROI on the mobile website, which was admittedly an experiment, was launched over a year and a half ago, was 4 weeks. The project paid for itself that quickly. They had, you know, booked $1 million through this in basically less than 3, 4, or 5 months. And this is a place they weren't previously. They didn't think that, and comparatively, that's a substantial amount of revenue to be recognizing through mobile channels.
Yeah. Now, Gwen, in the federal government, they don't worry about return on investment and profits. But I tell you what, if you speak to people like Sheila Campbell, you find out that, hey, if your boss tells you to connect with citizens, you're going to have to connect with citizens or you're going to be out working at McDonald's. Isn't that the case? I mean, you have to connect with citizens.
Well, you have to connect with citizens, but there also is a good ROI case for government, too. I mean, we're not looking at profits, but we're looking at ways to increase efficiency. I'll give you an example. The IRS has a mobile app that they created called IRS To Go. And one of the features on it is to allow citizens to check the status of their refund. And that actually has the potential to save the IRS money, because instead of some people calling the IRS, they're actually going to get the information on their mobile phones. And that actually does have an ROI. And IRS is actually, you know, taking a look at evaluating that.
I called them last week, and I want them to come down here and tell their story. I think this is the greatest story that hasn't been told. I mean, look how fast I get my return now. They do it electronically. I mean, you can shrug your shoulders and complain about the agencies and it's sluggish, but no, it's fast. And nothing's ever been lost, and there's never any problem. And me, my wife, 4 kids, I mean, no problems ever. So that's a great story to tell, in fact, going mobile. Tim, I'm asking another statistic question here. All kinds of surveys about folks in the United States with mobile phones and smartphones and feature phones. I see statistics that say smartphones about 30%, feature phones about 70%. What kind of numbers do you feel people in the United States have? Is that a good number, or you think it's higher or lower than that?
I don't know that I would look at that number as a single determiner for significance. I would actually look at it when you're building some sort of interaction with customers, your customer base and the people who are actually active within that. So in the case I gave earlier, that 30%, if that's the case of, say, a census study, that 30% may be the only people you care about. That's obviously in the commercial side. I think in the federal side, some of those things become true because some federal sites are oriented towards scientists or oriented towards particular demographics. But obviously, they do need to consider the lowest common denominator, which might be feature phones for some duration.
Well, I think the other thing too that we're seeing is that there's data that's showing that some low income and minority groups are actually skipping computers entirely and going right to smartphones.
I've seen there's solid data on that.
Yeah. And so when we're looking at, we have to check our assumptions at the door in terms of what's happening.
Right. No, I think I probably saw the same research which indicated that people were buying smartphones, even iPhones, which were thought as premium, because it's actually a lower total cost of ownership than a computer.
We'll get back, talk more about mobile applications and mobile websites. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have a doubleheader. We have Gwen Costin, Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, President of SiteWorks.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors, all without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gwen Costin, Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin. He is the president of SiteWorks, SiteWorx. Talking about the whole idea of mobile devices and strategy and what's the best practice and websites and security. There's a question. We had John Bordwhite in here from Symantec, and he is quoted in several publications as saying that 25% of all Android apps have malware in them. And that's a, now, if someone from Symantec says it, you got to wonder, do they have a vested interest in people buying their, you know, their security solution? And what do you think, Gwen? You think that's too high or too low a figure for Androids?
I have no knowledge about that in terms of what is the, whether that's too high or too low. But I will say that security is an important issue for government, and I think it's for everyone too. And you know what we're doing in government. I mean, there's, you know, cybersecurity awareness month, which is, you know, important for within government agencies, but as well as the public. And I think the public needs to be aware about what the vulnerabilities can be in their phones and in their products. From a government perspective, there's really two aspects of security. One, of course, is the security of the devices for people who are using mobile within the enterprise, within government. And then there's the other aspect of security, which is making sure that as we have products that we're developing out of in government, that we aren't introducing malware, or that we're not allowing vulnerabilities either in our software that we're developing or even within the APIs that we're putting out.
Tim, what do you think about security and federal agencies from the perspective of a federal IT professional trying to set up a policy or trying to understand how they can operate five different operating systems all of a sudden, five different phones, five different operating, which ones do you choose? How do you select? Or what are good practices for security and mobile devices, Tim?
Well, actually, we tend to recommend our customers consider using web first, web on mobile, not going with the native scenario that you're describing. I think the question, going back to this malware thing, is 25% malware. I'm not exactly sure what malware is, if it's intentionally malicious or just bad practices. And I think Gwen sort of touched on it with a lot of times that malware might just be doing something not so clever. I mean, there's bank applications now that people have discovered unintentional security breaches in mobile devices. So my recommendations would be consider web. Web has addressed a lot of these problems already. It's been hammered out over years and years and years. You have encryption. You have all these concerns around cookie management. All your data is managed in an isolated fashion. And then, you know, go native with a native app if you need to for other purposes. But what we often find with our customers is they are not totally up to speed on some of the features that mobile web actually offers right now. We've got an interesting chart that we show a lot of people that oftentimes about 80% of the features they think they have to use a native application to achieve are available, for example, GPS or even the cameras and the specifications. But the compass, the GPS, the accelerometers, all those things are available in the mobile web on a device.
But Gwen, they're very, very fashionable to say, I just got an app and there's 400,000 apps, 95% are never used. But it's fashionable to say you have an app for that, isn't it?
Well, it's fashionable, and it actually could be meeting a strategic goal. And I think that Tim is exactly right. You can't decide that I want an app because it's shiny, and I think that's a danger that we have. But we wanted a lot of things because they're shiny. There are some things, though, that I think actually, depending upon the audience and depending upon the goals that you have, one thing that you have when you have an app in an app store is you have the findability with the other apps.
Sure.
And so, from a marketing perspective, not only could you get lost among 400,000 apps, but you also could be found among 400,000 apps.
Yeah, we actually advise doing both. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you'll do a mobile web and with as many features as make sense there. But then you do a mobile app that might take the further features of the device as well as what Gwen's talking about, the findability. Hey, you can get discovered in both places either through, you know, Google or through the App Store of your particular device.
I was doing some research for the interview yesterday, and it came on this article, is why users don't trust mobile apps.
Interesting.
I mean, I just think this is a state of flux. I've been in this technology world for many years, and there are certain key times, I think, right around 95 when people started using the web and people had to figure out. And remember the first time I had Netscape put in my computer was really a fun experience. And people had to come up with best practices and security. And I think right now we're in this kind of this pioneer stage of, well, geez, there's five operating systems. What's the best? What's security? What HTML5? What about apps? And I think that's the benefit of having a conference like this is getting together people from three or four agencies to stand up and say, here's what we did. We looked at five devices. We're going to use this one. Here's what we did. We decided to prohibit one device and encourage one. And so it's a tough time right now to figure out what policy should be.
It's also an exciting time too. I think that's the other part of it too, is that in my opinion, we're really seeing a big change in the way we communicate and what we're doing and how we're interacting with information and services, not just in the government sector, but really across all of our lives. And I think that between social networking, between cloud computing, between mobile, we're really seeing a different way and huge changes in expectations. And I think one of the challenges that we have in government is meeting those expectations as best as we can, as efficiently as we can, without wasting resources that are limited.
Tim, I ask you a question in the real world. Let's say I work for Joe's Donuts and I come up to you and I say, I want you to rate me an app for Joe's Donuts. Just let people know how much an app can cost. There's a big pretty wide range in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's as much as any sort of enterprise application. It could be very small. It can be, you know, a week of work. You hear about these cases out there, people building, if someone's 8-year-old built an app in the App Store, which not necessarily verified, but you hear those sorts of stories.
Yeah.
It's software. And, just like Microsoft Word takes thousands and probably hundreds of thousands of man hours to write that application that sits on your PC, the same thing can be true of mobile apps. And you're going to see that level of investment in mobile apps as we go forward.
Now, what the GSA does is they're kind of acting as a lead in many of these areas, aren't they? And they're trying to give people options and say, well, this is a couple of choices you may want to consider. That's part of your job description, isn't it, Gwen?
It sure is. And we're actually not just taking the lead, we're also taking the role as convener, because we don't have all the answers. Actually, nobody has all the answers yet, but we're seeing great efforts that are done in all different agencies. And let me recommend to your listeners to take a look at apps.usa.gov, and there's a list of about 50 or 60 different apps that are available for mobile, and those include mobile websites as well as native apps. So you could kind of see an idea of what agencies are doing and exploring, what the early folks are doing. What we're trying to do in my office is to help accelerate and use the different tools that people have and the lessons learned to create and to accelerate the ability of agencies to use mobile.
So you work with about 25 different agencies?
At this point, yeah, 25.
Yeah, let's repeat that URL. It's
apps.usa.gov.
Okay, and all that. Great. Tim, do you think my listeners are going to be able to catch up with this mobile change? I mean, it's changed so much. Do you think it's too challenging? I mean, are people in the commercial world getting? I know they're getting overwhelmed as well. I mean, it's in the federal world they have so much hands are tied with security and budgets. Do you think they're going to match the change in society here?
I actually think we're adjusting to this more rapidly than we did the web overall. I think because in a lot of ways this is similar to the same problems that occurred when everybody started using their websites for communications. That movement from getting people to realize that was a whole channel of communication, a whole way to engage with your customers, that was a big mind shift. And that took, I don't know, you could argue it took 20 years really to get some people moving on that. Mobile, I mean, it's supposedly been the year of mobile for the last 10 years. But I think really the year of mobile occurred when the iPhone came out. That's when mobile actually became a viable platform for customer engagement. Since then, I mean, the adoption rates have been phenomenal, and I think the businesses are savvy, and some people are customers, and many non. I mean, Gwen is great in terms of how quickly the government has shifted. They even have a role for someone who's supposed to be leading this, and I think that's indicative of the type of responsive speed that we're seeing nowadays. So I would say it's responding quite quickly. I think part of the reason is just that we're all users, and we all have our mobile devices. We all live on them. We all know that and admit that, and we're making our own world better by enabling that.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll get your perspective, Gwen, on this and what you think the agencies are doing, and maybe some good examples of agencies that are flexible and changing. And we're not going to mention the bad ones because I'll get thrown out of the studio if we do. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Gwen Costin, Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, who is the President of SiteWorks.
Profile America, Tuesday, June 28th. In the past, hot summer days meant that some enterprising youngsters in the neighborhood would set up a lemonade stand at 5 cents a glass, or the family would share a pitcher of iced tea on the front porch to cool off. Today, the drink of choice is a soft drink, usually carbonated, And while the summer heat does call for more to drink, Americans have a powerful thirst all year long. As a result, we each drink about 49 gallons of soft drinks annually, up 15 gallons in 20 years. The increasing popularity of bottled water has led to an even greater increase. In 1980, we each drank about 2.5 gallons of bottled water. Now that figure is over 29 gallons a year. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
The Cloud Computing Minute is brought to you by Harris Corporation and VMware.
Hey, you! Can you get off of the cloud? If you don't know, you're not alone. Nearly 90% of federal IT managers recently surveyed either say their agencies don't have a cloud computing exit strategy, or if there is one, they don't know about it. Agencies need a cloud exit strategy if they want to move their data or change cloud providers. The survey, commissioned by Quest Software Public Sector, suggests that some agencies could get locked into cloud vendor contracts with no alternatives for the future.
Harris Corporation and VMware have teamed together to bring you Trusted Enterprise Cloud, the first cloud computing service with patented trust technology built in. By combining VMware's world-class virtualization software with Harris's decades of experience building some of the nation's most trusted mission-critical networks, Trusted Enterprise Cloud is the first cloud system engineered from the ground up to meet the highest performance and security levels. Don't risk your organization's IT on a cloud you can't trust. Learn more at harris.com/cloud.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language, with no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills? You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
The American Legion. We're a powerful force for the nation. We pledge ourselves to our veterans, our youth, a strong national defense, and Americanism. These four pillars shape our work and what we do for America. We work relentlessly within our four pillars of service, and we succeed. Go to Legion.org to find out more about the American Legion's commitment of service to America.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even change my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm Honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 67 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gwen Costin, Director of Mobile Office of Security Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, President of Site, S-I-T-E, Site Works, Site, S-I-T-E-W-R-X, tough one to spell, and a little tough for me to say this morning for some reason, I don't know. Well, instead of talking about the zombie apocalypse, I thought we'd talk about Flash, Jumpin' Jack Flash, and mobile, and Apple's position, and a lot of websites have Flash applications on there, and you go to that website, and the Apple device may not work, or it may be kind of funny on an album. Tim, what do you think of Flash, and is Flash going to be around in 4 or 5 years?
Well, we do a lot of work with Adobe, so I probably should be careful about my about my opinions on this one. I think Flash has its place on browsers right now. I think it does have some misuses, like many technologies, where people just use it as the solution for everything. I have to say I'm optimistic on HTML5 taking on a lot of the characteristics that previously were stuck within the Flash development environment. But right now there are some features that you can only get from Flash. And, you know, if you need those features, then much like the question between, you know, should you use a web app or a native app for a mobile device, I think the same question could be said in the future around should you use Flash or shouldn't you use Flash. There is an interesting development right now with the release of Creative Suite 5.5, where you can build a Flash application, which is essentially in a single build application for all the platforms. So if you think of many of the different development environments for cross-platform development, in a sense, Flash is trying to become that. And I think that's very interesting and exciting if they can, you know, pull it off in a successful way.
Because there's five horses in this race, and what, you know, if there's five operating systems, you want to have at least some kind of interoperability, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you could even simplify it and really say there's two horses that are winning. And I don't know if I should say that, but even with two, it's still substantial. It's still expensive, and building that application multiple times in very different environments is cost prohibitive. And Flash is trying to right now offer an alternative, which is build once in Flash and carry it into the different operating systems.
That sounds like Java, doesn't it? We were recording this using Adobe Audition, by the way.
Oh, so interesting.
Gwen, what do you think of Flash and federal websites and mobile applications? Any guidelines there? Any best practices for my listeners?
Well, I wish there were best practices, but we're building practices right now, so we have to be very careful about that. And I think the other thing we're seeing, though, because of that and because there's multiple operating systems, we're seeing a lot of innovation. So I think one of the things that we're seeing is, you know, people approaching the problems in different types of ways. I think that getting back to the idea of kind of, you know, what you should do or how, you know, should you use Flash or you shouldn't use Flash, again, I think agencies are best served by trying to figure out what they're trying to accomplish and for whom. And so if they're trying to convey a certain level of information, is Flash required? Do you need to use Flash to get that information across? When you're taking a look at the different handsets or the different tablets, we haven't really talked about tablets yet, that people are using, what is the best way to convey information and to provide the services that the agencies needs to meet the citizen needs from those different devices? If Flash makes sense on their website, it actually may not make sense to use it on mobile devices.
Agreed.
So I guess the generic question here is how can an agency best use content across both desktop and mobile channels? And the answer is no answer. The answer is find out what the long-term objective is, what your citizens require. Is
that I think that I think there is an answer, though, too, is that we also have to take a look at our content and the way that we're using our content, we're storing our content, we think about our content. I mean, is the right metaphor for content a web page? Or do we actually kind of go down to a smaller unit of content and try to figure out how do we actually truly separate that content from the presentation layer? How do you become device agnostic and take a look at your content so you can deliver it in multiple ways? And so I think that is something that we can do right now. I think it's going to take some clever thinking and also different ways we're looking at our information systems.
It's interesting Gwen brings that up. The reason we moved in the direction of mobile is because we do a lot of work on what are called web content management systems. And that whole concept behind web content management was separating the content from the presentation. And you may have heard that phrase is kind of a loaded phrase, but the idea is that, you know, the channel you get it through, whether it be one web browser or another, or Flash or HTML, or one mobile device or another, the content remains the same. And so what we call it component-based content management. It's different from what a lot of people are used to. A lot of people do what we call is document-centric, meaning it's a big document, it's not subdividable, you can't think of it as discrete pieces. And web content management, you split it up into discrete pieces and you put those together appropriate for the channel. And I think what Gwen is talking about is, you know, once the business users or the stakeholders really figure out what they're trying to deliver, it then becomes a channel delivery question, which is a technical question, but that content actually remains the same. I don't know if these are probably all very abstract concepts, but that's the kind of stuff we get into all the time.
Gwen, number two search engine is YouTube. I was trying to take off some wallpaper last December, and guess what I did? I typed in how to take off wallpaper, and I had three or four videos that showed me how to do it, and it worked real well. If you combine video usage with handheld phones and federal government applications, good opportunities again, or is this a challenge, or what kind of practices do you see are good for my listeners to take advantage of, especially with handheld and videos?
I think that's a great question. I think that, and it kind of goes a little bit back to the flash question as well, too, because a lot of videos are delivered in flash, and depending upon your user's handsets, you actually may not be able to view it. But I think that you could really imagine some really excellent applications for mobile video. One is to get information out there, but I think that your idea of, or your example of a how-to and to get information just in time is really critical. You could see it being useful in terms of training, in terms of showing people how to do things, rather than telling people. And I think that those opportunities are really important.
I was on the WordPress site yesterday, and they have a lot of videos for how to install different plugins and whatnot. It seems to be that's the trend of rather than having manuals and brochures, it's don't tell them verbally what you can tell them visually.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the visual use of phones is changing now with use of QR codes and all kinds of things that you never think of before.
Yeah, I think all the sensors that are available on a phone, the camera is one that's just starting to get used. And I say just starting, we see it being used, but I think we're just on the tip of the iceberg. Likewise, the GPS has incredible functionality, and it's still heavily underutilized. You can almost always improve your search by taking GPS into consideration, because typically people are thinking about their closer geography. So there's a lot of sensors and devices loaded into a phone that are currently only minimally being exploited. I think that will change. Over time, we'll see those devices becoming normal, having integrated augmented reality, where you're looking at things with the camera and you're superimposing information on top of that, similar to what Yelp does with some of its
similar to what the Terminator used to do on
correct. I mean, it goes all the way back. If you go to the Top Gun, it's a heads-up display.
Yeah.
It's really what you have overlaying your reality. That stuff's all possible even with mobile devices now.
Speaking of mobile devices, Gwen, let's talk about these tablets that are out there now. Do you think these tablets and mobile devices are going to fundamentally change the way content from federal agencies is presented to citizens?
I think it's already changed the way that people consume information. We're looking at, I remember when the first tablet came out, I was among many people who said, who would want one? What's the purpose of an iPad? And I've talked to a lot of people who said the same thing, and you put it in somebody's hands, and all of a sudden they are looking at things in a different type of way. And we're seeing in some federal agencies that there are iPad pilots that are going on to try to figure out how to best use this technology within agencies. It's different than a phone because it's a little bit bigger. You can see more on it. So I think for levels of training, it's going to be good. But we're seeing briefing books, for example, that these heavy-duty 1,000-page books are actually going to be available on different types of readers instead of on paper, and that makes it more accessible. There's actually a story I was reading last week that pilots are no longer, the FAA has made some changes to allow pilots to no longer have to bring their big manuals in, so they're actually using iPads right now in order to get the information about the plane or other types of instructions that they need. So we're really seeing it changing. And the other thing we're seeing about it, too, is that it's actually causing some changes because executives are really interested in iPads, and so they're actually bringing them into organizations. And we're seeing organizations like a military, like the Army, who are taking a look at using these tools.
Yeah, there's an article in the Washington Post talked about federal government using iPads. Take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about mobile technologies in the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gwen Cawson, Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, President of SiteWorks, SiteWorx.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Here's Sean Kingsbury, CIO Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board, on the Virtualization, What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix.
Virtualization really is an enabler to the five characteristics of cloud services. So in essence, our goal was to meet our timelines. Again, I mean, we had extreme timelines. So to do so, instead, we stood it up our environment, the test dev environment up in the cloud first, which in essence, we virtualized the infrastructure.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Virtualization is just the starting point to building a dynamic data center. With decades of experience in business critical applications, Microsoft and Citrix can provide your agency with the most comprehensive, cost-effective VDI experience by integrating management of your physical and virtual desktops. No wonder their customers are doing more by spending less. Learn how to leverage VDI to transform your telework experience and move to the cloud at Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
ACT IAC is looking for a few good members. Do you have what it takes? Are you a techie or a govie? Do you want to make a positive impact? Can you bring fresh ideas to the table? Join ACT IAC today and help solve government's toughest IT challenges while advancing your career and making great new friends and contacts. To become a member, visit actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Or call 703-208-4800. ACT IAC wants you.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have in the studio Gwen Costin, who's the Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, who's the President of SiteWorks, talking about mobile devices, mobile applications, mobile websites, and best practices, and what to do, what not to do. I like to have fun facts. Here's a fun fact I got out of a network world. 72% of smartphone owners who use their devices to access 72% use their devices to access sensitive information like banking and credit card. So this is another challenge, isn't it? You have security for mobile devices, and so my question to you is, Gwen, we've talked about all kinds of things, mobile devices and types of operating systems and best practices for website design. What three or four things that maybe my listeners can do in the next 4 or 5 months just to understand technology and test out devices, or what can they actually do?
I think always the first thing to do is try to figure out what you're trying to do. How does mobile fit in with your agency's mission? And I know that that's not exciting. It's not sexy as far as building. People want to build an app, but really thinking about what they're trying to accomplish. And while they're doing that, they should also think about what are the functions that they have, taking a look at their top tasks. We've been talking about top tasks in mobile webs or in websites for a long time. What are the things that people are doing with their agency? And that could be online or offline right now, and try to figure out which of those can be mobilized, which things can be, make sense to be done either anytime, anywhere, or that are localized, or maybe you'll leave boredom.
Yeah, that's not good. Speaking of boredom, I don't want to bore my listeners with all this tech talk, so I want to get up close and personal. I have my world-famous survey here. Tim, and you're going to have to take this survey online so our listeners can learn a little bit more about you. 10 questions, okay?
Sure.
Year of your first computer.
Year? Oh, I don't even know that one. Probably 85?
That's pretty early. That's pretty early. 84. Year of your first cell phone.
I don't know. I was a late adopter on cell phones.
Okay. So. Operating system on your computer at home?
We're both, I use Windows for work and OS X for home.
So we're both split. Yeah. And type of internet connection? Do you have a T1 come right into your house?
BIOS. Fibers. Okay. Beautiful. Yeah.
And I assume you have a smartphone that's...
I do now, but I was actually a late adopter to smartphones. I smashed my first Palm intentionally because it crashed on me 3 times, and I eventually said, if I keep trying to fix this thing, it's torturing me more than it's helping me. And smashing it was the only way to guarantee I wouldn't try to fix it again.
Speaking of apps, we talked about apps. How many apps on your phone?
Yes, I have quite a few.
Is that more than 10, more than 20?
It's about 4 screens.
4 screens worth.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you own a tablet?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And what social networking sites do you participate in?
Only LinkedIn at this point. I'm vaguely on Facebook, but I have this theory about information and noise overload, and I tend to find that Facebook has more noise than I need.
Yeah. And the last book you read, electronic or piece of paper?
Paper.
Paper. Wow. Yeah. This is a mix here. You're not really truly a nerd.
Bit of a Luddite, I suppose.
You're kind of a mix there. Man, I don't know if Gwen's a real nerd. We'll find out if she's more nerd than you.
Right.
Get the nerdometer questions out here. Okay, you're your first computer, Gwen.
Can you say Commodore 64?
Commodore 64.
That was TI-99.
So that's late 80s?
It's a long time ago.
Okay. your first cell phone?
I was actually a late adopter, too, on cell phones. So I was in the probably 98.
Oh, that's like operating system on your computer at home?
We are a multi operating system family. So we have Unix, we have Macs, we have Windows.
Yeah. Will the Unix get their leg up?
We do have some Unix actually down in the basement, but I don't use it.
Type of internet connection at home?
Too slow.
I try and find someone with a T1,
Why would you want T1 when you have Fios nowadays?
Yeah. I live in the beautiful District of Columbia. We cannot get Fios. Right,
feature phone or smartphone?
I have both.
Whoa, leg up on you there, Tim. Okay. And how many apps on your smartphone?
Probably 5 or 6 screens.
Okay. And do you own a tablet?
Yes. Love it.
And what kind is an iPad?
Yes.
Okay. And social networking sites you participate in?
Pretty much all of them. I'm a pretty social kind of gal. And if you want to find out what I'm cooking for dinner, find me on Facebook or Twitter.
And the last book you read?
I actually have 2 books right now. I'm reading Empire of the Sun about the Comanches, and I'm also reading Eli Pressler's the Bubble one, which is talking about information, and they're both in paper.
Paper.
Well, or hardcover.
You're both kind of a mix. I wouldn't have predicted that. I would expect all electronic, but...
I would actually say it's partially I'm an interface person, and sometimes that means that I adopt technologies when I feel like the interfaces are worthwhile. I think a lot of the early smartphones are just terrible. I mean, I saw people spend more time on them than I spent on my piece of paper. But, it wasn't until the iPhone I finally said, okay, this works for me.
Yeah, I'm a mercenary too, just kind of any port in a storm, whatever is going to work.
Yeah.
Tim, from your perspective, let's say I'm a federal IT professional and I'm getting my budget whacked and I'm getting everyone's beating up on me to more mobile devices. I got security concerns. What are 2 or 3 things that my listeners can do to open themselves up to new technology, maybe learn and try to adapt to this big change?
I actually think Gwen touched on something that's great, and it usually is a great way to reduce your costs, is top tasks. you find on mobile devices or even on web, the majority of the, it's sort of the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time is going to be spent on 20% of the things that you actually expose, but it can actually be much more severe. So you can typically distill things down to saying, you know, how do the top five things that my constituents need to do with my agency, and enabling those on a mobile device might not actually be that hard. And so like your example of the IRS with your tax return, that's probably, there's only two times they interact. It's submitting their taxes and it's getting the results with the IRS. And obviously they picked one of those as a way to deal with their constituents or their customers.
So Gwen, in 5 to 7 years from now, what kind of interviews will I be doing here? Will it be desktop computers, thing of the past, all mobile, or what are things going to happen?
I don't think desktop computers are going to be a thing of the past, but I actually do think that they're going to become more like vacuum cleaners, something that you don't use every day. In my house, you might use them once a month, but for the day-to-day work that people are doing, they're invisible. I did an interview with a 16-year-old I know very well, and I had asked, one of the questions I had asked him was, how often do you use your mobile device? And, you know, he picks it out of his pocket, and it's like it's attached, it's part of his hand, it's not anything different from there. And he says, I can't tell you how much I use it, I just use it. And I think that that's what we're seeing.
I think in a lot of ways, in 5 years, mobile's not going to mean the device in your pocket anymore. It's going to, it will be everywhere. I mean, right now, the computers in cars are getting ever more sophisticated. The integration between your cars and your phones is going to become transparent. I think you're seeing home automation systems. I mean, even from old brick and mortar companies are moving into home automation systems that tie everything home. So when you get home, your mobile device opens your garage door and triggers the electricity. You've got the smart grid coming on for electrical management. So I think in 5 years, this will be a really boring conversation to look back on.
Speaking of horse races and boring conversations, maybe not boring. So who's going to be the dominant operating system? Is this going to be like Windows with 90% market share? Is Apple going to have 90% market share, or is it going to be flipped? Is it going to be where Apple doesn't have the largest market share, but it's making most of the money? Where do you see this whole working out? I mean, is Windows to be written off? I mean, you implied earlier that Windows, people have told me that Windows is going to start really making a move here in the next few months.
I think Windows will come back in a year, is my suspicion. I think they will matter. I think right now they don't in a substantial way. I think it's going to be heterogeneous, and I think the world's going to continue to change. And the reason for that is that in mobile devices, the complexity of the operating systems is actually a lot lower. I mean, we're going to have a proliferation of devices that actually in some ways do less in terms of the complexity. Like your PC on your desktop or on your desk has millions upon millions of lines of code in order to fulfill all the services it has to do. Comparatively, I don't know how many lines are in a kernel for a mobile operating system, but I'm willing to bet it's 100th. And so as a result, you're gonna see proliferation of devices. You're gonna see new chips, like for example, MIPS right now is not substantial. And a lot of people don't think of it as a substantial chip manufacturer, but they actually power a lot of televisions. And your computer, your televisions are becoming computers in their own right. They're delivering, you interact with Netflix at them, et cetera.
That's the problem Nielsen Ratings is having is if there's no television in the houses, are they watching TV? Oh, they're watching TV, but on a computer. And how do you measure that audience draw?
Well, then also using the computers for game playing. You know, if you look at the number of people who play Call of Duty any given time on worldwide, I mean, there's millions of people who use it. And online, there's hundreds of thousands that are communicating with each other.
A great interview. I'd like to actually see what happens in a year and see if some of our predictions were true or not. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we had Gwen Costin, Director of Mobile Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies of the GSA, and Tim McLaughlin, who is the President of SiteWorks, SiteWorx. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Continuing congressional coverage is brought to you by United Technologies, among the top 100 public companies in Barron's latest ranking of the world's most respected companies. More at utc.com.